Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by LeMaster et al. Titled, Chronic Atorvastatin and Exercise Can Partially Reverse Established Skeletal Muscle Microvasculopathy in Metabolic Syndrome. This article was published June 22, 2018. Joining me today are Associate Editor Robert Hester, Lead Author Jeff Frisbee, and Content Expert Geraldine Clough. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. Jeff, would you give us a brief summary about the experimental design and your overall results?
Robert, the experimental design was targeted around trying to reverse established vascular disease and vascular dysfunction rather than blunting the development of it. As such, we used the obese Zucker rat model at 13 weeks of age, where we already have established vascular dysfunction, leading to impaired skeletal muscle fatigue resistance. We chronically treated the rats with either atorvastatin on a daily basis or with chronic treadmill exercise, a combination of both as clinically relevant interventions. Over the subsequent 7 weeks to 20 weeks of age, we then evaluated which these interventions are able to restore vascular function, vascular structure, microvessel density, as well as perfusion responses within the skeletal muscle. We determined from this was that while there were beneficial effects of both chronic atorvastatin and chronic treadmill exercise on specific indices of vascular dysfunction, notably endothelial impairment and some markers of perfusion distribution within the skeletal muscle, it was not possible to actually restore all of the vasculopathy that had developed. We were left with sort of a residual problem, largely which resided within structure. All mechanics appear to be extremely resistant to any sort of reversibility with intervention.
My question is, how good a model is it? What are the weaknesses of it?
The obese Zucker rat is a model that is based on a chronic leptin resistance. As such, the animal has an impaired satiety reflex and chronically overeats every day as compared to its age-matched lean counterpart. There are certainly strengths of the model as it relates to the development of metabolic syndrome in human subjects, where you have gradual development of obesity, a long period of insulin resistance that eventually tips into type 2 diabetes, and the development of a degree of hypertension that is certainly comparable to the severity that you would see in a flickered human population. There are some weaknesses of the model, however, that do have to be kept in mind. Some of the vascular remodeling, specifically the change into the wall mechanics, tend to be, there's not a hypertrophic response in terms of the vessel wall, which is a little different than you see in human models. You actually get a thinning of the microvessel wall and a restructuring such that the stiffness goes up while the vascular thickness goes down. So you're getting something that is fundamentally different than we generally see in people.
Jeff, you seem to focus on arachidonic acid metabolites. Can you maybe provide differences that atorvastatin versus the exercise might have on the arachidonic acid metabolites?
In our work, it seems that the arachidonic acid metabolism is largely a reflection of the chronic elevation of noxin and stress, the chronic elevation in subacute inflammation in these animals that they're dealing with. It appears that both the interventions associated with exercise and with chronic atorvastatin therapy improve antioxidant defense and improve anti-inflammatory defense. As a result, we tend to lower both of those stresses on the animal. And that really blunts the shift in arachidonic acid metabolism from the production of prostacyclin toward the production of thromboxane A2.
Do you think this is a pleiotropic effect of the statins, as they have been reported in humans, having both inflammatory and antioxidant effects?
I think this is almost entirely a pleiotropic effect of the statins. We have done studies in the past where we have used a variety of mechanistically different anti-cholesterol therapies that have these pleiotropic effects to greater or lesser extents, and we simply cannot pull out their impact on cholesterol as the driving force for the improvement in vascular function. So this does come down to an effect on oxidant stress and inflammation.
Could you provide me with sort of your reasoning for using this multi-scale approach from the whole animal all the way down to isolated tissues?
Certainly. Ultimately, the outcome that we are studying is the extent to which the cardiovascular system, or in our case, the microcirculation, contributes to the functional manifestation of peripheral vascular disease. Obviously, in skeletal muscle, that is going to be an accelerated fatigue rate or a reduced resistance to muscle fatigue. If we're going to be able to study this in an effective, informative fashion, we have to be able to understand the system at the most functionally relevant levels possible. And in our laboratory, that would be the hind limb preparation and the blood perfuse determination of muscle performance. But in order to start to understand what are the physiological and mechanistic contributors to these outcomes, whether the impaired ones or whether the recovered ones following intervention, we have to understand what's happening at the hemodynamic level, what is happening to blood flow distribution in the individual networks and individual microvessel bifurcations. Why is the endothelium functioning the way it is? How is that impaired? What are the different biomarkers that are predictive of our outcome? The importance of this approach that we take in our laboratory is that if we can get a series of observations and a series of results, either with the development of disease or with our interventions actually attempting to blunt or reverse disease, and these become consistent and they start to tell a complete coherent story where the observations at different levels are all giving us support for the observations at the other levels of resolution. I think this lends a lot of strength to our ability to interpret our data and actually come up with something that is consistently interpretable and consistently relevant across levels of resolution.
Jeff, can we talk a bit about the reactivity and perfusion distribution improvements that you report with your intervention, particularly the combined intervention, and focusing on the microvasculature for a minute? You've previously shown that the microvascular disease is progressive through the microvascular network in your previous papers, and not readily reversible at all levels. Where do you think the statins and the exercise are working?
In my estimation, it seems that the statins and the exercise are working initially in the distal microcirculation at your 3A to 4A sort of level, where you're getting sort of the higher resolution perfusion to demand matching. It looks like we are bringing back endothelial function there at one of its first effects, blunting that production of thromboxane, blunting the actions of thromboxane, and allowing a gradual restoration of perfusion distribution and the temporal activity of that perfusion distribution in the distal microcirculation. This also appears to work its way back for the proximal microcirculation at a little bit of a slower pace. And a lot of that appears to be associated with a restoration of normal sympathetic tone distribution, sympathetic reactivity throughout the proximal circulation. Part of that is coming from the endothelial dysfunction coming back, whereas other parts of it appear to be a restoration of sympathetic tone and sympathetic reactivity and its distribution in the proximal levels of the microcirculation.
So when you're seeing an improvement in your distribution coefficient gamma, you're thinking of a loss of temporal variability in the OZRs versus the LZRs that's being ameliorated by the intervention?
Absolutely. I'm actually thinking about this from the perspective of a loss of both spatial and temporal. So when we talk about the gamma coefficient, it sits at its normal level in the lean animals, and then we've seen repeatedly that it starts to shift off of that normal level as you move into different models of cardiovascular disease risk, in this case, the obese sucker rat. That's certainly a problem, but the real issue that we think is more significant is the progressive loss of the temporal variability in gamma, such that over time, this entire system becomes blunted, and its ability to respond to stimuli, to respond to an imposed challenge, simply to maintain organ perfusion and organ function becomes progressively compromised through a temporal means as far more important than spatial. Basically, the system loses its flexibility, simply cannot adapt in a way to maintain organ function.
It's notable that the combination of treatments had beneficial effects that were far greater than the two interventions singly. What do you think is happening here?
I certainly think that the combination effect of atorvastatin and chronic exercise is definitely impacting both the spatial distribution phenomena and bringing back the temporal variability that is necessary for optimal function. Our data at this point would suggest that when you treat with atorvastatin, you get a certain series of outcomes associated with nitric oxide bioavailability, the restoration of prostacyclin production, blunting oxidative stress, blunting inflammation, things like that. You also get a very similar set of outcomes associated with chronic exercise. They are incomplete as individual interventions. We get some restoration, but certainly not the optimal restoration that we're hoping for. It's only when we can actually treat with both interventions at the same time that we get a sufficient restorative stimulus on the system and a sufficiently broad-based approach to restoring some of our biomarker bioavailabilities that we really are looking to reduce the clinical manifestation of peripheral vascular disease.
Thinking about this in translation to human health, the reports in the literature, including our own, are a bit mixed when it comes to treatment with high-dose statin on microvascular health or improvement in microvascular health. Do you think that what you're seeing in the rat model can be translated to a human beneficial effect?
I think certainly there is an aspect of this that is highly translatable to the human condition. Obviously, a lot of this has to be done with some caution. You know, rats are not small humans. Clearly, I think there is a wide body of literature that suggests that a chronic exercise intervention will be very beneficial in sort of improving your cardiovascular disease risk profile, vascular function, microvascular function, perfusion responses. I think the atorvastatin issue is a little bit of a touchier subject. There are certainly examples in the literature where chronic treatment with atorvastatin has improved outcomes, yet at the expense of others that may also be considered to be important. So when treating with the drug, I think it's important that we can look for what are the actual outcomes that we're looking for and which ones are we prepared to tolerate that may not be as beneficial for the patient. So I think while exercise is an easy one, I think the atorvastatin is on balance a good intervention, but I do not think it should be used without some caution and consideration.
I'd like to thank Jeff and Geraldine for taking their time today to participate in this podcast.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology podcast. For more podcasts like this one, visit us online at physiology.org/journal/AJP Heart.